From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. It was just last year that concerns around violence between law enforcement officers and mostly people of color coalesced into a series of local community conversations, the intention to foster understanding and to build trust. The conversations have gone through something of an evolution, now formalized into a series shaped by facilitators from the community and professors at the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. The program is now funded by the City of Wilmington. With us today to explore these community conversations, where they are now and where they're going, is Chief of the Wilmington Police Department, Chief Ralph Evangelist. Welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Also with us today, Deborah Dix Maxwell is president of the New Hanover County NAACP, as well as district director covering Bladen, Brunswick, New Hanover, Pender, and Onslow counties. Deborah Dix Maxwell, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. You can ask a question or make a comment by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org or find us on Twitter at coastlinehqr. Deborah Dix Maxwell, why did you get involved in these community conversations to begin with? What are you hoping to achieve?
There needs to be a better rapport, which has improved, between the community and law enforcement, not just the police department, also the sheriff's department, as I said, law enforcement, period. And I am a member of the community, not only just, you know, with the NAACP, so it's important so that others would also become involved, because these conversations cannot exist without others speaking.
And what you have said and what you're saying also is that you are concerned about violence between law enforcement officers and members of the community here in Wilmington, in southeastern North Carolina. This is something that we've all heard about through the Black Lives Matter movement and protests across the country, but it's something that we're seeing here, in your opinion.
Yes, it is.
How are we seeing it?
We are not seeing injuries in the past year. I think Chief will agree with that. Through law enforcement, the injuries are being inflicted by other community members on other community members at this time.
Chief Ralph Evangelist, how would you characterize the relationship right now between members of the law enforcement community and citizens that they police?
I think it's better. I think it always can improve. I know that, the purpose of these conversations were to get law enforcement, the public, and these professional moderators to help get us talking to one another, because clearly we can never understand each other's point of view unless we talk to one another, and not in an adversarial or confrontational way, but in an equal, person-to-person environment. And I think that we're starting to see that. But clearly, in American policing right now, we've got to be able to interact with all segments of our community, and we have to come from the avenue of mutual respect. We have to respect one another. You cannot get respect unless you give respect, and it goes both ways. And this helps us to develop this respect issue by understanding one another.
And there are people listening right now that I can promise you don't understand why there is this disconnect between law enforcement and members of the community. There are people listening that would say, well, I don't understand. If you just obey the law, then, there are those people out there who really don't understand this gap. So how would you characterize the gap? Where did it come from?
Well, it did not happen overnight, that I can tell you. It's been generational, decades upon decades. And quite frankly, I mean, we saw it back in the 60s with civil unrest. We saw it in the late 60s and 70s with the war on drugs. I mean, all of this has, built upon one another, whereas this issue of us against them, this distrust of one another, and it's kind of morphed into this we're targeting, you know, certain segments of society to put them in prison. And personally, I believe what we've been doing is we've been trying to obey the law and enforce the law. The problem is we've got to understand what the ramifications of the laws are. I mean, clearly the issue of the war on drugs, the use, abuse of drugs, and the addiction to drugs should not be a police problem. It should be a public health problem, and it should be treated as such. And until we understand that it's a public health issue, not the dealers, but the people. If you had someone addicted to drugs in your family, you understand how this affects the whole family structure. It's a sickness, and if we need to treat it as a sickness, then I think we can get beyond some of these issues with the whole issue of drugs. I mean, we need a national conversation on drugs. I mean, that's part of the problem. You got an issue with guns and violence. Unfortunately, we see a big overrepresentation in some of our minority communities of violence and guns and gangs and drugs. Unfortunately, the heroin epidemic, the major customer are, you know, white people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the reality of it. So until we address the insatiable appetite of drugs in this country, we will continue to have these issues percolate in our minority communities.
And Deborah Dix Maxwell, as a member of the community and as president of the New Hanover County NAACP, I know that you could probably fill a very long book with how this kind of relationship developed, this strained relationship. But for the sake of listeners who don't really understand the problem, how would you describe it? Why is there this disconnect between law enforcement and members of the community?
It's part of, I would say, the new Jim Crow. Because when you were unable to lynch people, laws were made like the invisible war on drugs, which is now visible because heroin affects more whites than blacks. And that made four people to be incarcerated in mass numbers. But it's ironic now, marijuana is illegal in so many states. So the same people who had the entrepreneurial skills but illegally produced the substance cannot profit from the manufacturer of it at this time. So everything goes round circle. The laws are created by people who are in power, and that's why we encourage everyone to vote, because some of these laws are just illogical. They're insensitive to the needs of the community and the public, and North Carolina is a prime example of that. So Chief is required to follow the law, and I agree with your statement, because years ago your predecessor, Chief Cease, when I was a precinct secretary, and crack was epidemic on the north side, he was all about arresting people. And when we asked the question, what are you going to do about treatment to the people who were there? It was at Community Boys and Girls Club. I won't forget it. It was like a pause in the room. But in my mind, you can't arrest someone for substance abuse without having the facilities to treat. That's why you're having that mental health thing that the city is linking with Trillium for, the city or county and stuff. And what you can't, because if you just keep doing the revolving door of arrest, you're not
treating the problem.
Not treating the problem.
And you're not looking at it as a public health crisis.
It is a public health crisis. It truly is.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about a series of community conversations between law enforcement officers and citizens that are designed to promote understanding on both sides and build trust. If you'd like to make a comment or ask a question, you can give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Darcel from Leland, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just want to sing praises for Deborah. Yes, I'm Darcel from Leland Ladies for Legislative Leadership. And I'd like to have Deborah expound how not only voting, because those kinds of things as a lifetime member of NAACP seem to be challenging our community, because I do live in Brunswick County, how inclusive can things like housing, because if you have any kind of record of being incarcerated, you can't even get a place to live or food to eat. And I just think that's so backwards. And I love Deborah Dix Maxwell. You know who I am,
yes,
Deborah.
I do.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Darcel. Deborah, what would you say to Darcel's remark about just how difficult it can be, what a barrier getting housing can be?
Housing and employment. It's difficult. Brunswick is a rural county with limited resources. New Hanover has more resources. And we've had a flux of people who, if they want housing, will come here. There has been an increase. But one of the things, not only with housing, is employment. While there's been a nationwide issue, and I believe President Obama confirmed about banning the box to allow people to proceed further. We have expungement clinics, but they are few and far between. And if you do it on your own, as Chief knows, it's costly. It is not cheap to remove those minor offenses off your record so that you can get a job.
And that's largely what we're talking about, people who have been caught up. Chief Evangelist, can you fill this out for us, the kinds of offenses we're talking about?
Well, if you have a felony on your record, all right, the big F on your record, you're not going to get a job. You won't be allowed in public housing. I mean, and so you're in a situation where you're forced to have to live. Mm-hmm. And so they get back into the business. If some of these folks who want help, and we have had people who want help. If they had the opportunity to get a job and to try to save themselves, they would. But unfortunately, it's a vicious circle that never seems to end.
You're listening to Coastline. We've been talking with New Hanover County NAACP President Deborah Dix Maxwell, Wilmington Police Chief Ralph Evangelist. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to meet one of the creators of this community conversation initiative and one of the key facilitators. If you have a question, give us a call, 910-343-1138. This is Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're talking today about building better relationships between members of the community, particularly where people of color are concerned, and members of law enforcement. With us now to talk about the Community Conversations Project that's currently underway is one of the creators of the program. Dr. Tom Barth is professor of public administration at the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. Tom Barth, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you.
We also have with us a man who has made it his life's work to help young African-American men find their way in a world that isn't always constructed to support their development. Frankie Roberts is the executive director of LINC, Leading Into New Communities. He runs the Light Manhood Program, and he's a key facilitator of these community conversations. Frankie Roberts, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
If you have a question or a comment for either of our guests, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. Tom Barth, I'd like to start with you since you sort of took this idea and shaped it into something official that the city of Wilmington is now funding. How did this evolve into what it is today and who's involved?
Sure. I want to mention that this is also in partnership with the New Hanover County Sheriff's Office. So it's the Sheriff's Office and the Police Department. And this really came out of a product of ongoing conversations in the community about how to respond to the violence in our community, and also certainly influenced by the national conversation about the interaction between police and neighborhoods, particularly minority neighborhoods. And we've seen national issues. We also have had our own problems here in this community. And so about 2 years ago, the city had a series of town hall meetings that the city had sponsored. And one of the outcomes of that was a number of focus areas, and one of them was law enforcement. And I think the reason for that is that if you think about particularly minority communities where people feel disenfranchised to begin with, you know, one of the main sort of institutional places that you confront government, you know, is the post office, the DMV. It's also, I think, law enforcement. And the quality of that interaction, I think, sets a tone for people's whole outlook on life oftentimes and their prospects. So I think the focus, as Deborah and Ralph said earlier, really was what can we do to increase the quality of those interactions, build trust, break down barriers. And, you know, the Department of Justice has often offers free training seminars, but those often are very large groups, 50, 60 people. And we said, you know, you really can't have real conversation that size. So we wanted to break it down. And really what we built on was the model of the Light Manhood program that Frankie can speak to, with small numbers of young black males meeting with police officers. So we really expanded on that model. So that's really the story.
Frankie Roberts, how did this start? You started with a small group of people. Why did you see the need for this? Because you started some of these conversations even before the Black Lives Matter movement exploded onto the national scene, didn't you?
Well, kind of, sort of, but it just kind of just happened. Captain Donnie Williams with the police department, we often talked about our Light Manhood program, and I say, in fact, Donnie, why don't you come by one day? So he did, and so we got into a pretty intense conversation with himself and he brought an officer with him, and we happened to have some young men in our program, and it was a real intense conversation. And we thought it was good because the young men was able to see the officer as human, and the officer was able to see the young black male as human. And so from that perspective, we got to know each other, not necessarily on the battlefield. And so what we did is just start and say, man, this was good. Let's just set up opportunities once a week and bring different officers, and so that we can get young men engaged in a conversation with other officers, and maybe we can create a little harmony. And so it just took off from there.
So what are some of the things that officers learn about these young men, or that the young men learn about the officers, that suddenly make them human? I mean, what are some of those eye-opening moments where a kid either goes, oh, I see what you experience, or an officer does that?
Well, I guess the primary thing is being able to put your imperfections on the table. And an officer is able to say, when I police the inner city, this is how I feel. And the young men to say, when I'm being policed by an officer or law enforcement, this is how I feel. And so we saw some of the common threads of maybe it was consistent. I'm fearful, and I'm fearful. And then why I'm fearful. And I think that over time, being able to have those very transparent conversations, it kind of got better. And I would say it's simple things. Is in the black community, respect is high on the list, especially among young African-American males. The officer hadn't always responded with respect. And they have a job to do, but maybe based on some of the perceptions, I might be a little stern, or I might say, where you been, where you coming from?
Versus, now you're talking as an officer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Versus, do you know why I stopped you? Can I see your driver's license and registration? The conversation didn't start with respect. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, a young man being fearful, he didn't, even if the officer was respectful, he didn't respond respectfully. So those are just with simple pieces that we were able to kind of take the edge off of.
There was a story that came out at one of these meetings, one of these community conversations, about a teenager, a kid, who had been followed home by a police officer, and it turned into a very tense situation. Tom Barth, can you tell us about that?
Sure, and I think that's just a good example of, I think, how these conversations can help people understand the misperceptions. And In this particular case, a young black male was driving about a mile from his neighborhood. The blue light came on behind him. The officer saw I believe it was some type of equipment malfunction. Well, the young man immediately became very frightened and said, I'm just going to keep driving and go into my driveway. So as the police officer said, right there, it starts. Stop. And we don't see you stop. We get concerned. Why aren't they stopping? On top of that, the young man got on his cell phone to call his parents. The police officer says, I don't know who you're calling. You could be calling some, you know, friends that are going to be part of an ambush. I don't know. I'm by myself. So it starts building. And the boy pulls into the driveway and then immediately throws open his door. Mistake number two, don't open your door. When a police officer, wait for the police officer to come to you. So at the same time, dad comes running out of the house. The police officer sees that out of the side of his peripheral vision. So he's just nervous, and he doesn't know what's going on. And again, the point Frankie made is police are scared also. Mm-hmm. The people in the police, the community is scared. The police are scared. And we often hear the police officers say, I want to go home tonight too. And so, but I think the point is that, and what came out of that was we had this concrete idea of we should be training young people when they get their driver's license, what to do when a cop pulls you over. And so it's just an example of how something that started innocently, and of course, again, the young man did not stop because he was afraid. And the police officer said, why are you afraid of me? Mm-hmm. I'm a public safety officer. Well, I'm sorry, sir, I'm deathly afraid of you. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the issue that we're dealing with.
Frankie Roberts, why was that child? Are we talking about somebody under 18, a teenager?
Possibly.
Young
I'm not
man.
Sure. Young
okay.
Man. Young man.
So why is this young man deathly afraid of a police officer?
Because of history.
Which parts of history?
Well, I was going to say, you know, certainly way back in civil rights, but I'm also going to say most recently in communities, inner city communities, there's not, again, that respect piece, because I think that we in America, all of us have been socialized that young black men should be feared, because when we're inundated with the media that portrays black males in a criminal light, that when we see a young black man, it's based on he probably a thug, he's probably got a criminal history, he's probably not working, versus how we view white males that are youth. He's probably working, he's probably has his own business, he's probably doing the right thing. And it's literally just the way we've been socialized. And so based on that, you know, I don't necessarily think that, you know, I grew up in the inner city, and I have seen cops, in my humble opinion, not practicing the behavior that I see in other communities. And so as a result, over time, that, you know, young men have become frightened. And based on that, because I know how I taught my son, is when the cop come up, put your hands on the steering wheel, be extremely respectful. Even if they aren't respectful, you be an angel. And so based on my experience growing up, that's why I teach my son that way. Not that that's the right way, but that's just the reality. And I think over time, parents kind of teach their children to be afraid, even if there's no reason. But hey, be on guard, because I know how police used to treat me in the civil rights era. So I want you to always be, you know, afraid. And that's what we are trying to change, because if nothing changes, nothing changes.
And you gracefully put this in the civil rights era, but we know that there are things that happen now,
yes,
that are unsavory. We've seen it on cell phone video, Dr.
Yes.
Tom Barth.
Well, I just wanted to add that, again, the point of these conversations is there's two sides to this. And that's why I should also mention that we have each of these sessions are facilitated. And by the way, these are designed by Dr. Bruce McKinney from our Communication Studies Department. So it's both of us in partnership. But these are designed to really to be co-facilitated by a person from the community along with a law enforcement officer. So that's part of the design here, to make both sides comfortable. But I want to mention just Frankie's point, you know, stories are coming out of these. And one story last week was a young police officer who's trying to do the right thing. I'm trying to build good relationships. So I pull into a neighborhood, and there's a circle of young children. And I stop the car. I let them come in and play with the lights and play in my car and, you know, get, you know, and the couple of moms come running out, and they say, get away from him. He's going to hurt you. And so the police officer then, he goes, so how am I supposed to respond to that? So this idea of it's a two-way, mm-hmm. And that I think is really important. Yes. But again, that history drives a lot of this. But it's really poisoning, I think, in some ways, the present.
So is part of this then is creating a new reality as we speak? Because a lot of these fears that come from parents are based in practical reality, Frankie Roberts. I mean, when you were teaching your son how to get through an encounter with a law enforcement officer, this is because you knew if he didn't do it properly, he could die.
That's correct. And again, when you have that conversation with anyone, it almost paints law enforcement in a unpopular, unpositive manner, and that's not the intent.
Right, as if the result of this relationship is entirely the fault of law enforcement.
Exactly, because we serve some young men that are jerks. But, I mean, that's with anything. Some of us are jerks, black or white. But I think, again, we are socialized to think that if I'm going to encounter a jerk, it's typically going to be a young black male. And so we got to kind of dispel that. And I don't know how you do that other than through these conversations. Mm-hmm. So that in the conversation, the community conversation, when I go back to my community, I believe that I will start saying that, hey, I met an officer. Now I see a different perspective. And then they can influence some of their friends, family, parents. And then we are off to rediscover and redraw our present that doesn't necessarily have to be bad based on the pains of the past. And that's, man, I believe we can get there.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with Frankie Roberts of Leading Into New Communities, who is also a facilitator of these community conversations between law enforcement and members of the community. We're also talking with Dr. Tom Barth, a professor of public administration at the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. He is one of the creators of these structured community conversations in their current form. If you have a question about this program, or you'd like to share an observation about the reason for the relationship between the community and law enforcement as it is today, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Tom Barth, how is the participation going in these conversations so far?
Well, we just started, really. We've only had two sessions. We have 20 more neighborhoods to go over the next several months. And these are neighbors identified really by the police department, the sheriff's department, as what they would say are higher tension neighborhoods. We've been out to, and we go between the county and the city. So we were out at a neighborhood called Walnut Hills, Apple Valley, a few weeks ago. Last week we were in, we call the Brooklyn District, 5th and Red Cross, roughly, meet at D.C. Virgo. And we were really pleased to see there was about, we're really trying to, and this is important for people to understand, we're deliberately keeping these sessions small. So someone last week said, well, why don't more people know about this? Well, we're really trying to, through our informal networks, through Frankie and through Linda Raleigh, the police department, others, to really reach out and get a diverse group of people who are going to bring multiple perspectives. And again, avoiding the 20, 30 person, we want to be basically, the model really is about six of the police officers who patrol the neighborhood, about 6 to 8 citizens who are in that neighborhood. And so last week at D.C. Virgo, we actually had 14 citizens arrive, and it was a very, very rich conversation. But I think every week we do this, it's every 2 weeks, a big part of the challenge is trying to reach out and recruit the right mix of folks from the community.
It seems like it would be very risky in some ways for a member of the community to participate in these conversations. If you want me to be real, then I have to trust that what I share in those conversations isn't going to be used against me, or I'm not going to become a target out in the world later. Frankie Roberts, is that a concern for people?
Always. Yeah, that's always a concern. But I think that's is the intent for the group to be small, so that as we invite people, we want to invite people that has a high level of trust in those communities. And trust.
People who are well-respected,
yes,
within the community.
Exactly. Because that's what I believe is going to help transform the communities. But that's kind of takes the edge off of the lack of trust. And I know we have the law enforcement buy-in, the sheriff and the police chief, on their end, to be able to kind of regurgitate that same consciousness, that same thought that, hey, let's not, let's let this be a true relationship building process. And if people share things, let's not use it against the individuals, because that is going to be a question.
Tom Barth.
Well, I just want to mention, it was interesting last week at Virgo, one of the young police officers said, you know, I did not want to come here. I came because I was ordered to be here. But I can tell you, I'm really happy that I listened to this conversation.
Yes.
So that in of itself, I think, is indicative of what we're trying to do.
Yes, we won. That's a win.
Yes, yes. It's got to be hard as a law enforcement officer if you genuinely feel like you're trying to do a good job and protect the community and you just keep getting beaten up in the public eye. That's got to be tough. What kind of understanding do you think this officer took away?
Well, I think that it's really important that people understand how difficult the jobs are for these police officers. They got to wear two, almost have split personalities. On the one hand, you got to be the law enforcement arrests some very bad individuals, then all of a sudden switch gears and become this interpersonally sensitive person. It's really difficult to go back and forth, I think.
We're talking about how to improve the relationship between law enforcement and the communities they police. You're listening to Coastline. We'll be back in 90 seconds. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're talking today about the community conversations underway between law enforcement officers and the communities they police. We're looking at why these relationships are strained, not just here in the Cape Fear region, but all over the country, and what local members of the community are doing to improve those relationships. With us right now is New Hanover County NAACP President Deborah Dix Maxwell, Community Conversations Facilitator Frankie Roberts, and Wilmington Police Chief Ralph Evangelist. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, you can give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. And we have one segment left for you to get that question or comment in. In the last segment, if you're just joining us, we were talking with Frankie Roberts and Dr. Tom Barth from UNCW, who helped create this program in its current form, about how these conversations are going. And Frankie Roberts, you were talking about how raw these conversations are, how honest they get. And that's what's really helping to foster the understanding here and bridge some of those gaps. But it's striking to me, if I'm in the role of police officer, I'm not sure that I want to tell people that I'm frightened of them. That's a level of honesty that feels dangerously vulnerable to me. Is that a legitimate concern? And I also want to hear from Chief Evangelist on that, but go ahead, Frankie.
Well, I mean, I can only speak to myself being a facilitator and the last opportunity in the Brooklyn District, D.C. Virgo, last week, is one of the things, or one of the ground rules that I put forth was, please put your imperfections on the table, because none of us are perfect. Even in our day-to-day operations in a community, whether you are on the side of law enforcement or the side of the community that day, because law enforcement is not all, they are citizens also. So they have to move in and out those preferences. So they got two jobs, which sometimes creates the difficulty. But if we put our imperfections on the table, because I hadn't always thought like I should think, but if I put my imperfections on the table, then it creates an environment where I can get the right information. For instance, an officer said at one time that, you know, we might have two, maybe three officers working an area. John Q. Public thinks that they're a bunch. So I would say if I'm in the black community, the response time is longer. But it wasn't necessarily because I was in the black community. The response time was longer because it's only a few officers working that area. And if they are somewhere else, it's going to be a little longer. So it's just those concepts that, you know, we talk about. But if I wasn't honest enough to say, hey, y'all be slighting the black community, then I couldn't have got the truth. And that's how we sometimes falter. We don't put our imperfections on the table.
So that takes more courage.
Yeah. So if an officer says, I'm a little frightened when I go there, then it doesn't create an environment where we could talk about certain institutions and practices in that community. And so then love can take place when we are both honest.
Is that what you see happening, Police Chief Ralph Evangelist? Are you, as these two sides of the community, and it's more nuanced than two sides, certainly, but as they work together to foster understanding, is love taking root?
I think it's going to be a long process because, like I said, we didn't get here overnight, and we're not going to get to the other side overnight. But I do believe that understanding each person's point of view, because really, let's be honest about this. A white person's perspective of what goes on in the black community is totally different than what a black person's perspective is what's going on in their community. I've made a point of saying we've got to stop saying that a black youth or a black individual has been killed. They're all of our they're our kids. When we look at a 17-year-old, a 16-year-old, 14-year-old gunned down the street, I tell people we don't look at that as a black person or a white person. It's one of our kids. We should all be appalled that this is happening. All right? And if we do that, if we understand that it's a societal problem that we all have to attempt to solve, I think we can get there. But to get back to the issue about being afraid, you know, there are some officers obviously that it's just human nature, especially if you come from a white environment, you've never been in an urban environment, and suddenly you're now working in an urban environment in a minority community, and you've been exposed to what the stereotypical issues are. And honestly, part of this is, unfortunately, in our minority communities, there's an overrepresentation of violent crime against each other. And so if you're exposed to that every day, you say, whoa, you know, this must be really dangerous or really bad. And the reality is there's a lot of good folks there who are afraid. They want these bad guys gone out of their neighborhood. And so I think that it's healthy to be a little scared, to be a little apprehensive, because, you know, there are bad people in the world. Whether it's white or black or whatever. I mean, there are just some bad people out there that will hurt you or worse. So I do think that we're making inroads, but it's something that needs to be a long-term issue and not something that we're going to fix in a week or a month or 6 months. It's a longer-term issue.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about a series of community conversations between law enforcement and members of the communities that they police, the intention being to build trust and understanding on both sides of this conversation. With us today, Deborah Dix Maxwell from the New Hanover County NAACP, Wilmington Police Chief Ralph Evangelist, and Frankie Roberts, Executive Director of Leading Into New Communities, and one of the facilitators of these community conversations. If you'd like to ask a question or or make a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. Veronica from Leland, welcome to Coastline. Oh, sorry, this is not Veronica. This is Cherokee, right, from Wilmington?
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. Well, to the chief, my main question is the fact that drugs are a major problem in this city. And since that is a major problem, why not focus on whoever is supplying the streets of Wilmington with drugs? Get the top guy, whoever he is, knock him out the box, and that'll make the streets safer. Why can't that be accomplished? Why go after the small fries instead of going after the big dogs?
That's a great question, Cherokee, and I think that's something a lot of people who aren't involved in this wonder about. Chief Evangelist.
Well, we have knocked off a lot of major drug dealers. Unfortunately, people just fall into place and take over. But a lot of times, in order for us to get to that top drug dealer, we have to knock off the middle dealers in order to be able to work it up the chain to get to the big guys. We know the drugs coming out of New Jersey, Connecticut, New York. We know that's the pipeline here, especially the heroin pipeline. We have taken off, I mean, major, major, major drug dealers. Our DEA task force works these major drug dealers. The problem is, until you take care of the problem of the use of drugs and the appetite of drugs, they will continue to be drug dealers. They'll continue to be a pipeline of drugs. We have to have a whole different focus, in my opinion, on the issue of drugs in this country, or a conversation as such. But unfortunately, you know, these mid-level drug dealers are the key for us to get to the top players, because a lot of times they are out of state, and we have to backtrack to them.
Cherokee, thank you so much for your call. Veronica from Leland, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Good morning, or afternoon, I should say.
Good afternoon.
I just had a question. It was primarily for the chief, but Frankie and Deborah can feel free to jump in. Growing up in New York City, we had officers who walked the beat in our neighborhoods, and we knew them as kids. They knew us. And recently, I'm seeing more and more videos and more TV reports about officers who, in other communities, who are sent out on calls, whether they be noise or what have you, that deal with kids of color, Hispanic and African American. And those officers, instead of making it a bad situation, use some common sense, and in one case got into a dance-off with the kids, or another case started shooting hoops, and it became community policing at its finest. It diffused situations. The kids got to know them. The officers came back to the communities. I think community policing works. I think it puts a face on the officer, and it puts a face on the community for the officer. And a lot of the things that your guests have been talking about, that those mutual fears and distrust that currently exist both with some of the officers and with some of the neighborhoods, can be overcome. Is there any way we can do that, or are we doing that? I haven't really heard a lot about it in either Wilmington or Brunswick County.
That's a great question, Veronica. Chief Evangelist, community policing.
We are head over heels of community policing. We have foot beats in all of our public housing areas. We have 4 foot beats right now working the Castle Street, Queen Street corridors every day of the week now. We mandate our officers get out of their cars every time their shifts, to get out and walk the neighborhoods when they're not on calls for service. So unfortunately, foot beats are the most ineffective and most
What do you mean ineffective?
Ineffective meaning it requires a lot more manpower, mm-hmm, or person,
so it's
power.
Much more expensive for,
okay,
the department.
So you're walking, you can't respond to a call. Okay, you have to get back to the car and then respond. And
is that why foot beats tended to go out of favor for a while? Is
there was a transition to the professional model of policing, which was called then, where they got into cars and they ran from call to call to call. And unfortunately, what that did was it created a barrier between the community, because you had no more personal interaction going on with people. So we're committed to foot beats, and we do on a pretty regular basis. We even got bike patrols, Segway patrols. We've got a gator now, a John Deere gator, that we use in the neighborhoods where we can, you know, we, it's almost like a golf cart, but it's a gas-powered golf cart. And the response has been great. You know, everyone wants foot beats in their neighborhood. Unfortunately, we just don't have the staffing to be able to do that and to be able to respond to calls of service. We handle about 180,000, 190,000 calls of service a year. Do the math. That's a lot of calls.
Deborah Dix Maxwell, how has the community changed over the years? When you were a child, do you remember officers on patrol, on foot? Do you remember thinking a police officer was a friendly member of the community, or did you grow up in fear?
I'm probably an exception. I could not grow up in fear because I grew up at a church that was filled with police officers. Clarence Fredlaw, the late George Davis, you know, and others. So I was exposed as a child growing up constantly around law enforcement, which may not always be the same for every child in their neighborhood or whatever, but for me that was the norm. I knew that's what they did and understood that. The disconnect comes when children don't have the exposure, like Chief said, through community policing or through school. And sometimes now with the school-to-prison pipeline, sometimes kids are, there's that hesitancy. There was a positive, and then the pipeline and the presence of SROs, and it's not only the police fault, it's the fault of the school administration for saying, I'm not going to handle this. I'm going to let them handle this. Some things that could have been taken care of, it's a lack of administration and management on behalf of principals that sometimes it causes some pipeline issues, and that teacher. They don't have correct management, and you need to make sure that the school system gives them some sessions and keeps your people out, law enforcement people out of it. That is true.
So this is about relationships between students and teachers, too,
right,
in the schools. Also,
but that relationship, that is the first person that a youth sees on a continual basis who wears a badge. But that is the person, like you made the comment about the mother said, oh, he's going to hurt your child. That's the same premise that child sees between that SRO and them. And that's why the memorandum was signed, to decrease these things. And we will look and see the numbers and see whether there has been a decrease.
I want to get to this email quickly. This person writes, are all officers trained to deal with mental health crises? And if not, when will that training happen, especially since in the near future there will be a path to mental health help rather than jail?
Yes, our mental health system is a mess in this country, all right, and it has been for a long time. We have done a mini CIT training, critical incident training, for all of our uniform officers, and we've got about 80 to 90 actually fully trained CIT officers now on staff, and we have an agreement with the Sheriff's Department that we will always have someone on staff, either with police or Sheriff's Department, that will have available to be able to call in a crisis situation. So we're on that road to get all of our uniform folks CIT trained.
Next question, briefly, just a couple minutes left. Search efforts for missing person Ebony Spears were exhausted. What else can the police do?
We may have some news in the
You may have
near.
Some lead? Oh. Would you please?
I can't tell you it might be good news or not, but it probably
good news?
Might be good news.
Has she been found?
We're not totally certain yet, but we're close to be able to say something. So
that she may have been found.
Well, maybe. Okay.
Okay.
We're following up a lead. We think that it's I'm cautiously optimistic right now.
Well, that's good news, potential good news, on which, yes, quick.
I want to invite any of our folks out there who want to go on a ride along with our officers, please take advantage of that so you understand the dynamics that are going on out in our community.
That's an invitation that's open to any citizen.
Correct.
Any member of the public.
Yes.
That's excellent. We didn't have enough time. I'm so grateful that all of you were willing to join us today. That's this edition of Coastline. Deborah Dix Maxwell, Frankie Roberts, Chief Ralph Evangelist, and UNCW's Tom Barth, thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks to all of you who emailed and called in to join the conversation, and join us next Wednesday for Coastline when we take a closer look at challenges facing veterans trying to get health care. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Our producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of today's show, look for it on our website at whqr.org or download the podcast from the iTunes store. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.